This is a sermon given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website at saintdave.org.
The beginning of John is crucial to our understanding of our faith. It defines Christ for us, establishing him as God in the world made flesh, created by God. And it sets Christ firmly in the beginning of creation with God, rather than as a creation that acts for God. The Word acts in concert, fully, as a part of God's self. The Word is God. Through the Gospel of John, we know that Christ was with God from the beginning of all time, all the way back to creation, all the way back to Genesis, to that moment where God moved over the deep, his breath, the wind brought about creation from the formless void and darkness that covered the face of the deep. The light and the breath, God the Father and Christ the Son as one. Genesis and John speak of God's imputation, a creation of something out of nothingness. God saw something in the deep and brought that promise into being. Just as the waters were separated by God and the dome of the sky appeared, Jesus appeared in Mary's womb. Unexpected. A miracle of God's own doing. What happened from these creation moments with God was a springing forth of plants and fish and animals, of humanity and flesh, of being and presence on earth. This is the same way that every baby appears in every womb as a miracle. But in these specific instances in Genesis, as in John's gospel, there is something specific that changes the world and everything in it. There is a clear moment in each of these stories where God works specifically in order to move the needle on the way that we as God's children interact with and manipulate the world that we are a part of. These moments are thus set apart as creation and labeled for us as miraculous. Now, in the time between these stories told by Genesis and by John, there are countless stories of man's interaction with God's creation and the ways in which God's people got it incredibly, miserably wrong. But it's important to remember also that each of these bears a moment where God generously imparts wisdom and care to his people through the prophets, by visions, and by very direct communication, as he did with Moses on the mountain. God is always present to them. By this presence, God's people come to know and trust God. They inherit and uphold the law or Torah as it was revealed to them. And in this time, as a mark of their progress and care, the law comes to be crucial for God's people because it creates a structure for them until they find the inherent grace and truth that is Christ. The law held them in good stead until it didn't. And then there was a turning point where God no longer saw for God's people a way forward. And I think we've all been there, in that place where we no longer see a way forward. Paul talks about this turning point at length in communication with the people with whom he has started churches, finding a new way into grace. And as such, Paul has a unique ability to do that because he is a Jew who intends to remain a Jew, though he is also a disciple who understands the role of Jesus and the new covenant in the world. What Paul imparts here in Galatians is this turning point, whereby law is no longer the saving grace of God's people, but rather there is a grace that is guaranteed by God, inherent. It is a story that is played out through the birth, the ministry, and the death of Christ in the resurrection and his ascension. Paul is careful to say that because of Christ, the law is no longer necessary for justification. God's people no longer have to be guarded by the law because faith has already come. God's people are, as he says, no longer subject to a disciplinarian. Now, this doesn't mean that we throw out the commandments. Let us still not murder, beloved. Let us hang on to that one. And also to the Sabbath, because maybe we cannot avoid murder if we do not have the Sabbath. It's like God knew. But this makes sense. We can set down the worry of the law if we have been freely given salvation and righteousness. We will no longer need coveting and violence between us because we no longer need to fight for our place there in the hereafter. It is simply guaranteed. You see, we have arrived at grace. And as a result, God will put upon us righteousness and praise according to the words of Isaiah. They will sprout from us like shoots spring up from the ground, unbidden, effortless. Wouldn't it be nice if we were all acting as if salvation and righteousness are what we are made of? As if we effortlessly exist as God's own, imbued with a sense of peace and safety. If we lived into our own unique gifts without breaking a sweat, as if we do not need to make it happen because it just is. It's not so far-fetched. In the dark, inside the soil, seeds are broken open and life is given to seedlings which give way to entire plants, and that is not something they have to do. It is something that just happens. If we want to participate in this creation and growth, we can tend it. We can intentionally plant food or ornamentals and care for a garden in order to enhance and assure its growth. Sure. But we cannot make it happen, as any gardener will tell you. Nor can we keep that growth from happening, as poison ivy is my witness. God's green earth is full of God's creations, and none of it have we actually created ourselves, not blackberries or potatoes or orchids, not one thing. And I don't know about you, but I am still surprised and delighted every single time a seed sprouts, even when I planted it on purpose and can expect it. I find it miraculous that something can grow out of nothing like that. Every seed is simply given an ability to flourish with a promise that it may simply thrive, just as we are as Christians. God sees the promise of each seed. He sees the promise that each one holds, just as he sees the promise that each one of us holds once we are broken open and allowed to spring forth into new life. All that new life requires is the light. Which brings us back to John, who states clearly that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. This implies, friends, that the darkness was already there. Just as the darkness is always there in the soil, that is where the seed germinates. Into the darkness shines the light, because the darkness was already there. This is why Will Gaffney puts a black candle in the center of her Advent wreath rather than a white one, because the incarnation, she says, was black. The light shines into the darkness, darkness that is not to be feared, because the darkness is generative. The light shines into the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. And from the light springs forth new life. And from that moment on, life will just keep springing to life over and over and over again, cyclically, but also eternally and in cooperation with God. From the darkness with the light, there is life. We do not have to do anything to make it happen. Of course, I should say that we must be good stewards if we want to continue to flourish here, but that is really about the longevity of us as a human people if we want to stay here on earth. And for our children to stay here with resources, we will have to follow a set of standards. That is to say, we will have to live by a law and in a way that allows for us an earthly future. And I guess the question is that the business of God, or is it our own distinctly human business, this set of standards? I think it is human, but I also know it to be inspired by God. It is what Moses was getting at with the law and commandments. The law that was given to Moses by God is earthly and applies to order to our living right here. But the law has no bearing for us on whether or not we are resurrected and ascend to heaven. That is what this scripture is speaking of. For us and for our salvation, he came down from heaven. And there is nothing we need to do in order to guarantee our place with God. And I guess that should be the end of the story. But it doesn't seem to be, because we're still here. So then perhaps we need to decide what we are doing in our time here on earth. What purpose do we serve here, and why should it matter? Are we just biding our time until we reach the hereafter? Perhaps we are meant to enjoy poetry and art, to grow vegetables in the darkness of the earth and wonder how it happens. Perhaps we're imbued with thousands of nerve endings so that hugs will matter and food will be incredible. Didn't God do all of that for us? Then why do we eschew it? Why do we forego the pleasures of life in order to wade into bitterness and sorrow? Can't we simply enjoy one another, lean into the sweetness of creation that we have been given with its delights and surprises, and live together in love? We've been given the moon and the stars, the earth and its bounty, and everything in between, and yet we do not even begin to realize the immensity of the love and the prosperity that is possible if we encounter fully what God has allowed for us here on earth. We have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. And yet we act like we have never known Christ, as if we are not indwelt by the Spirit, as if we are not made of his love and grace. We forget that we are love and light embodied, created of the same things as Christ himself. From his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace, John says. And yet we act as though we do not have enough, and we withhold resources from those who have even less than we do. We are afraid of being without. We are afraid of lean times, of disaster, and so we hold on too tightly to our resources. No one has ever seen God, John says. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known. Perhaps we do not remember whose we are without the proof of God's face in our memory. Perhaps to us, God seems unreal. Or perhaps that's an excuse we make so that we don't have to live into the promise of the miracle of his creation. But is that true? Do we really not remember who we are? Do we really not remember that we know God? Close your eyes, loved ones. I'll protect you from here. You're safe. Now ask yourself, do you know God? Look to your heart. Feel it beat with the life that was given to you. Take a deep breath and hold it. Now let it out. Appreciate your lungs that allow you to be here breathing this air. Think of someone you love as if they are right here in this room with you. Let the joy of being with them fill you up and hold that feeling right there. That is God beating right there within you. It's hard work being part of a miracle, y'all. That's why this earthly life, that's what this earthly life is. It's a miracle. And it is hard. Gravity is real and so heavy, but it's also what allows us to feel our feet on the ground and to hold fast. Though we have not seen God's face, we know God. We have always known God because God dwells within our hearts. God fills our lungs and our thoughts. God directs us and guides us in every moment that we are willing to draw near. Don't you think it's time we start living as if that is true? Perhaps the rain lilies don't deserve to bloom when they do, but I don't think they're concerned with that. Neither do we have to be concerned with how we came to be God's own gorgeous creatures. Perhaps it's enough that we just be them. Maybe we could simply stand tall in the beauty that we are imbued with and love right down to our roots, stretching forth to expand into God's great glory given to us right here on earth. Amen.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.